Right now, it's time for Food Friday, and today we start with a riddle, courtesy of producer Carl Christensen, who is apparently part hobbit. He likes riddles. Here it is. I'll make your cake rise. I'll improve your best roast, but you'll really open your eyes when you pair me with toast. What am I?
Well, this is a tough one, except that I know that we're talking about butter this half hour. Elaine Kosrova joins us now. She's a former pastry chef and the author of the book Butter, A Rich History, which takes a detailed look at the culinary, scientific, and cultural history behind this everyday ingredient and shares some recipes as well. Elaine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for that great tune that you played beforehand. I loved it.
The best in butter-themed music, definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of us, I include myself, will take butter for granted. I use it. I cook with it. What inspired you to tackle it in this book?
Yes, I join you in that. You know, for most of my life, even as a pastry chef and also as a longtime food writer, I took butter for granted. But I was fortunate in my last job. I worked for a cheese magazine. I was fortunate to do a lot of traveling in the dairy world, and I got to try, of course, lots of cheeses, but many different kinds of butters, and to see the processing, and to really kind of step back and say, wow, the butter market has completely changed from say, 20 years ago in the States. You know, we have so many different brands, but also different kinds, you know, like higher-fat butters and cultured butters, whey butters, even goat butters and sheep butters, you know, different animal breeds that are giving us new kinds of butters. So that was really my inspiration, was kind of looking at the variety and wanting to understand the nuances between these butters. And then when I started to, you know, dig in and see the history that surrounded butter making, I was, you know, at that point I was sure there was a good book in this whole story between the science, the craft, and the history.
Well, Elaine, how far back does butter go?
Well, we'll never know precisely because it's well, well before recorded history, but we're pretty certain that it aligns with domestication of animals, and it would have been most likely sheep and goat. Those would have been the first butters, not a cow's milk butter, because those were domesticated later, and at least 9,000 years ago. So the earliest recorded history is from 2500 BC with the Sumerians, because they actually have carvings on their temples that show butter making. So, you know, many thousands of years ago.
It always amazes me, these big food innovations. Do you think back and wonder, how did it occur to people to take this milk from an animal and churn it and do what they need to do and make this solid fat out of it? It seems like a big leap.
Yeah, most likely it was an accidental leap. We're pretty certain that some milk, whole rich milk, ended up in an animal skin, you know, being carried by a shepherd across the hill and, you know, down the valley. And through that rocking back and forth, you know, we can surmise that butter was churned in that skin with the rocking. So when that shepherd got to his destination and opened the animal skin, you know, lo and behold, there's beautiful pieces of butter that I'm sure, you know, mystified him. And actually, butter making really was a mystery and kind of a magic for a lot of people up until, you know, a lot of producers up until the 1800s when we finally kind of teased apart what was going on. But, you know, it's when you think about it, it's like, you know, you have this liquid white milk and you shake it and you get these rich, beautiful morsels of fat, of golden fat. I mean, it's quite remarkable when you think about it.
These days we have these kind of seesaw arguments about whether butter is good for you or bad for you and whether you should be eating margarine instead of butter. But I imagine a long time ago, butter was prized because it was fatty and rich and it fortified you.
Very, very sustaining. And, you know, the tide is turning on fat. We've realized that being on a high-carb diet has kind of led us down the wrong road health-wise. It's not good for many metabolisms, you know, out there. People have different metabolisms, but a high-carb diet is not ideal for us, and our bodies need fat. Our brains need fat. We need good fat. There's, you know, some research that shows that the saturated fat in butter is actually quite a bit healthier than the saturated fat in meats. because of the composition, because of metabolism. So there's lots of good evidence for supporting, you know, butter back on the table. Of course, in moderation, but I tell people all the time, you know, once you eliminate all these sugary foods that have a lot of butter, you know, like cookies and cakes and pastries, like, we know that's not healthy, right? Those are, you know, guilty pleasures that we allow ourselves now and then. But once you eliminate all of that and you have butter in this savory way, you know, on your toast, cook your fish in it, have it on your baked potato, I mean, that's a moderate, healthy use of butter that really anyone can enjoy.
Talking to Elaine Kosrova, author of Butter, A Rich History. And Elaine, your book took you all over the world, including here in Wisconsin. What did you come to Wisconsin to learn about butter?
Yeah, I mostly came to talk to your experts. I wanted to, first of all, find out about the animal anatomy that allows, you know, a cow or a ruminant animal to eat grass and weeds and shrubs and turn that into this rich, delicious milk that we make butter out of. I was really kind of, I call it like this Rumpelstiltskin effect, you know, and I really wanted to kind of understand it. So I went to the University of Wisconsin to, you know, meet some of the specialists there. There's a woman also who explained how the udder works and how important that is. And then Bob Bradley is renowned as, you know, like the butter king in Wisconsin as far as understanding the technology and the science of butter making. So I spent a lot of time with him as well, and he's a huge resource for me.
What surprised you about the way that butter is made and the science of butter?
Well, I have to say the industrial production really surprised me the most, because I discovered that one of the reasons supermarket butters and, you know, big brands have this great consistency. When you think about their texture, you know, like, it's smooth, it's velvety, it's cohesive. If you've ever made butter at home, it's really hard to get that texture. You know, it'll taste just fine. It certainly melts just fine, but it doesn't have that velvetiness. And what I discovered is in the industrial plants, they put the cream through what's called a physical ripening, this tempering process. You know, we're talking about, like, little shifts in temperature up and down, and what that does is it shifts the ratio of solid and liquid fats in the cream. And when you have just the right ratio of liquid and solid fats, you get this beautiful texture. You know, if you have too much liquid fat, you end up with a kind of greasy butter. And if you have too much of the harder fats, you end up with a more brittle butter. So I was kind of, that was like a big surprise to me. I didn't know that that happened. I thought, oh, they just bring in the cream and churn it, and there it goes. But we can be, you know, quite happy with the production they do in the big plants. It's very clean. It's very pure. It's there's no additives. It's good production. Although I, you know, of course, love artisanal production too, because it can be so interesting.
Let's dig into a recipe. You've got some in your book. One we have shared on the Central Time Facebook page. It's a dessert recipe, not one of the savory ones you mentioned. It is a butterscotch pudding. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's a very simple recipe, and honestly,
yeah,
it's one from my childhood, because I remember my mom used to make this quick dessert of a butterscotch pudding, essentially. And she sometimes put it in a pie crust and top it with some whipped cream, and it was really delicious. So I just went back and, you know, started to look at butterscotch recipes from, you know, from the 1900s, because really it's not a flavor that has been popular, you know, in this millennium. It's kind of lost, been lost in the shadow of, I think, caramel sweets and caramel flavors. Butterscotch is slightly different. It's not cooked for as long, so it has a more sort of honeyed taste. So I love it, perhaps because it's from my childhood, but I do think it's a really nice treat.
And when we come back, we will talk about smoked butter. We're talking right now all things butter with Elaine Kosrova. She's the author of Butter, A Rich History.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you cook a lot with butter? Do you have a favorite kind of butter? Have you tried artisanal butters? Have you ever made your own butter? How did it come out? Do you have a success story or did it all go wrong? And do you have questions about how to cook with it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post and find that butterscotch pudding recipe over at the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our conversation with Elaine Kozrova, a food writer and the author of the new book, Butter, A Rich History.
You can join in this Food Friday conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about butter, its science, history, or how to cook with it, or your favorite uses of butter? You can share those with us as well. And if you make or have ever made your own butter on a small or large scale, love to hear from you as well. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Find a butterscotch pudding recipe while you're there.
And we'll take our first caller now. We've got Jackie on the line with us in Stanley. Jackie, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
My question is, I just moved to Wisconsin from Washington, and there was a farmer's market out there that puts butter in their coffee. It's called Bulletproof Coffee.
Yeah, I remember that.
Butter with coconut oil. And so I was wondering if your guests had ever heard of butter in your coffee.
Jackie, thanks a lot for that. And Elaine, what about that, the butter in the coffee? I've heard about a kind with yak butter, actually, too. What do you know about that kind?
Yeah, the Bulletproof Coffee, I have heard of it. I think it's trending really, a lot across the country. There's coffee shops, even in where I live in the Hudson Valley, that are serving it. From what I hear, it's meant to give you a lot of sustained energy throughout the morning. Most people have it, you know, as a quick beverage in the morning, you know, if they're not having breakfast. And what's interesting is that it comes from the tradition of yak butter tea from the Himalayas. Apparently the man who came up with Bulletproof Coffee had been hiking in the Himalayas and was really impressed by how drinking the local tea that's whisked with yak butter and a little bit of salt gave him a lot of stamina and energy and alertness. So he came back and created this mixture of butter and coffee and the coconut oil, or MCT oil. It's called medium chain triglyceride oils. I haven't had it myself. I do have friends who have it and like it. They make it in their blender every morning, because you do need to whisk in the butter, otherwise you end up with a kind of slick oil on top.
I've had hot buttered rum. I don't know if it was made right. It was hot rum with an oil slick on top.
Yeah.
Didn't like it that much. Maybe there's some whisking required.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
Jackie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We go next to John in Horicon. John, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, John?
Well, today I wanted to bring up a little thing about butter. I had once went to Madison to ask, where can I get butter that is uncolored and unsalted? I was told, well, they can give you sources for unsalted butter, but you cannot get uncolored butter. There's a state law or something that all butter must be colored. And
John,
I wondered what response I had to get from that.
John, thanks for the call. So that brings up a couple questions, Elaine. You had mentioned earlier, I mean, is butter naturally yellow in color?
It is if it's if the animals are on pasture, generally. You know, the yellow color comes from the diet of the cows. Now I want to just specify that this is about cow's milk butter, because goat and sheep's milk butter will always be naturally white. But cow's milk butter will be golden depending on how much beta-carotene is in the animal's diet, and that depends on generally how much fresh grass they're eating. The more fresh grass, the more beta-carotene usually in the butter. So I hadn't heard, I'm not aware that butter had to be colored in any particular states. I mean, there was a lot that went on, you know, during the margarine wars of the last century, when butter was competing with margarine, and so there were lots of different laws about coloring or not coloring margarine, so that it didn't look like butter. But as far as coloring butter, in general, it's not done in this country. I will say what's interesting is that of all the foods we have in our market, butter can be colored, and it doesn't have to be listed on the label. So you could have a colored butter and not know it because it's not required to be listed on the label. That's kind of a special dispensation that butter producers get.
John, thank you so much for that phone call. And I wanted to ask you, Elaine, about why butter lends itself so well to cooking. I mean, there's almost nothing in the world that smells better than just onions sauteing in butter. And then you have French cuisine, which seems like it would not exist at all if it weren't for butter. What is it about butter?
Butter is a remarkable ingredient when you consider how its uses change with its temperature. You know, if you have a soft butter, you can cream it to make, you know, batters and doughs, cookie doughs and frostings, you know, make cakes with softened butter. But then when it's firm and cold, you can make beautiful layered pastries with it. And then, when you melt it, as you mentioned, you melt it for cooking and sauces, it has a whole other contribution to, you know, what we do in the kitchen. So it's incredibly versatile, incredibly flavorful. You know, if I was, like, stranded on a desert island, I would just want a lot of butter with me. I could do so much, that, you know. It's really remarkable, and I think people underestimate that usually, even chefs, many chefs I know.
And when I bake cookies, I realize how different the texture of the cookie is based on how much I soften the butter. When I used to microwave and it gets liquid, the texture's not so great.
Yeah.
The colder it is, the different. What is it about butter that makes it so different at really kind of subtly different temperatures?
Yeah, it's really the saturated fats. You know, when you think of oil is the same pretty much, you know, it's kind of liquid all the time, right? But it's those marvelous saturated fats, and I'm not kidding, they are marvelous, that are responsible for, you know, much of the variety in butter's reaction to temperature. And then we use that in all these different ways.
We're talking with Elaine Kozrova right now. She's the author of Butter, A History. We're talking about butter on this Food Friday. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you like to do with butter? Do you have a favorite variety? Do you go salted or unsalted? And what about these artisanal butters that Elaine has been referencing? You can call us at 800-642-1234. And Elaine, you've sampled far and wide with butter. What did you come up with? Is there a holy grail of butter, either in big batch or artisanal, that you really think is the thing?
There really are so many wonderful butters out there. You know, a couple of hundred years ago, there was a lot of bad butter out there, I have to say, between, you know, the sanitation wasn't great, refrigeration didn't exist. You know, for most of mankind's history, there's been a lot of rancid butter, dirty butter, moldy butter. We are so blessed with many, many wonderful butters. I have to say I have some personal favorites. I love cultured butter from France, but there are some American producers, small producers now doing beautiful cultured butters. So I also love goat butter. I've discovered one from England that's not too goaty. You can get some goat butters that are very goaty, but this one is very subtle. And you taste it and you're like, oh, what's that? You know, it's interesting, like, just complexity that you don't quite expect. So I really encourage people to try some different butters, and especially if you put them side by side with each other, it gets really interesting.
Let's take another caller now. Becky is with us in Madison. Becky, hi.
Hi. So I know this is really sad news, but I'm actually allergic to dairy.
No.
I can't eat butter. I know, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Are you sure? Is it lactose? Because...
No, unfortunately, it's not lactose. It's all dairy.
Oh.
So I wonder if you have any suggestions, particularly for baking, for how I can skip using butter.
Uh-oh. It doesn't sound like you have great news for her, Elaine, but the best she can do. Any advice?
Yikes. Yeah, well, you know, I guess I would look at one of the really, you know, most natural vegetable oil blends. I wouldn't go with, you know, Crisco or any of the really industrial stuff. But, you know, if you look in a health food store now, there are definitely options for all the vegans out there, right? I mean, they bake things, too, and don't want to use butter. So I know the stuff is out there. I'm sorry I'm not an authority because I'm I'm all about butter. So I apologize. I'm not an authority on that. But I do think there's some much healthier choices out there for you than there ever were.
And Elaine, we want to ask you about the other recipe you gave us before we see if we have time for one last call. Smoked butter. What's up with that? I've never heard of it.
Right. I was inspired to create smoked butter because I was reading a book by Michael Pollan, and he talked about visiting this chef, this European chef who made his own smoked butter. And I was like, having had smoked cheese a lot, I thought, oh, yeah, I want to try that. And I did a little research and discovered this tiny gadget called a smoking gun. You can buy it online. It's made by Polyscience. It's this little gun-like thing you held in your hand, but it shoots out smoke, and it can shoot smoke through a small tube that you basically pipe into a container. So you take a butter, doesn't have to be homemade, any butter, and you put it in a container. You take about a thimbleful of, they send you little wood shavings. You light those, and then it creates a smoke that is then sucked down through the tube into the container. You put a lid on it, and you let the butter kind of bathe in the smoke for, really as long as you want. It depends on how much smokiness you want, but, 10 minutes or so. And it doesn't penetrate the butter, so it's not super strong. It's just this interesting, intriguing kind of smokiness that you get. I really like it. It's fun, especially from like doing a dinner party or something.
We'll leave it at smoked butter. Thanks so much to Elaine Kosrova. We've been talking about butter and her new book. It's called Butter, A Rich History. You can still check out her recipe for butterscotch pudding over at the Central Time Facebook page, or check out today's Food Friday page over at WPR.org.